Once upon a time, in a slightly too much inhabited island, lived a young woman called Amelia, who learned how to walk on water. The feat was not unprecedented. Two or three young men had already performed it, and a clergyman's wife, picnicking with her husband at the seaside, had scrambled for nearly half a mile over quite choppy water in order to retrieve a lost picnic basket. But her husband attributed that effort to the power of prayer, and as the newspapers did not know what to say about it, nobody took much notice. The attitude of the islanders towards the achievement of the young woman was remarkable. Cherishing an old tradition that it was more difficult for men than for women to perform anything except childbearing and teaching kindergarten, they supported their belief by making other accomplishments almost impossible. When Amelia announced her intention of learning how to walk on water, nobody definitely forbade her. Her mother said, "Well, of course, young people in these days do as they like, and I can hardly expect you to pay any attention to my feelings." Her pastor said, "Unhappily, all this athleticism and publicity is lowering our high standard of ideal womanhood and diverting the attention of our island women from their true function of motherhood." The president of the local Athletic, Aquatic and Seawalking Association said that he could not possibly admit Amelia to membership, entitling her to the use of pacing boats, stopwatches, dressing rooms and so forth, but that she might possibly be allowed to join as an associate member, a privilege hitherto reserved exclusively for the wives of members. Amelia, however, being an obstinate young woman and seeing that nobody would help her, determined to help herself. She got up at 6 every morning before she went to teach in her kindergarten and practiced walking on water. First, she walked across the open-air swimming baths. Then she walked across the river. Then she ventured out onto the sea. When she had practiced for some time without attracting any particular attention to herself or otherwise damaging the islander's ideal of perfect womanhood, she announced that she was going to walk to the mainland. Now the island was separated from the mainland by 30 miles of rough and difficult channel. Upon two occasions previously, young men had managed to walk across this after several months of careful preparation. The National Athletic, Aquatic and Seawalking Association had sent out launches and trainers and floating kitchens for their assistance. The rubber firms had competed to supply them with free waders, and the Cinema News Service had arranged for a special film of their performance. But when Amelia announced that she was going to make the same attempt, these two young men laughed at her, saying, "Since we, with all the undoubted superiority of our sex and the assistance of our fellow countrymen, only just managed to achieve this heroic feat, how can a girl succeed?" The leading press syndicate arranged a symposium by a novelist, a film star, a retired judge and a bishop on the subject, "Why Girls Can't Walk on Water." And Amelia's mother said, "Now don't be silly, dear. Sit down quietly and finish your needlework." But even this did not deter Amelia. She bought a second-hand compass, a pair of bargain basement waders, a tin of meat jujubes and a sixpenny walking stick, and wrote a note to the kindergarten saying that she might be absent for 1 or 2 days. Then, very early one morning, she set out on her adventure. For the first mile, nothing happened. The sea looked very large and empty, and Amelia remembered all the tales she had been told of young women who set off on wild goose chases and came to a bad end. But as she entered her second mile, a retired sea captain, looking through a telescope from a bedroom window, as was his custom every morning before shaving, saw her small figure bobbing over the faint groundswell. He immediately rang up the police station, which rang up the Coast Guard's office, which rang up the lifeboat, which dropped a hint to the local reporter who rang up his city news editor, who rushed out a late morning edition of the paper with the headlines, "Amelia sets out." The lunch hour edition carried a couple of photographs of Amelia at home and a leading article on "Our Island Spirit." The evening papers carried an interview with Amelia's father, a picture of her out at sea taken from an aeroplane, a descriptive paragraph of the kindergarten where she had been teaching, and a chat with the president of the Athletic, Aquatic and Seawalking Association, who said, "Our girls are wonderful. We are proud to have Miss Amelia as a member of our association." By the time Amelia had reached her 10th mile, the channel was strewn with launches, motorboats, yachts and pleasure steamers, and the announcement was made that she had beaten the seawalking record for the first 7 miles. The two young men champions, when interviewed, declared that for a girl, Amelia had done wonders, and the leading press syndicate changed its symposium from "Why Girls Can't Walk on Water" to "Do Seawalkers Make Good Mothers?" Night was falling, and Amelia, already weary, had to scramble up huge breakers high as houses and slither down again on the other side. She lost her compasses. The meat jujubes began to make her feel seasick. Her waders were full of water and her sense of direction failed. In the dark and the storm, she lost touch with her many followers, and the morning papers were able to go into 3 editions carrying the headlines, "Amelia Missing." But in the morning, wet, footsore, hungry, chilled to the bone and green with seasickness, Amelia was seen again, struggling on gallantly towards the mainland coast. 2 hours later, she dragged herself out of the water onto the mainland shore to find a crowd of 25,000 people, the representatives of 30 newspapers, 12 cameramen, the president of the Mainland Aquatic Association, and the mayor and corporation all awaiting her. She was received with splendid ceremony. Schoolchildren dressed in waders presented her with 59 bouquets, and the mainland king sent her a silver walking stick. "Thank you very much indeed," said Amelia. "And now, if you don't mind, I should like a hot cup of tea and to go to bed." "Oh, but I'm afraid that is impossible," said the mayor. "We have arranged a reception for you in the town hall, which has already cost us several hundred pounds. Now that you are a celebrity, you must not disappoint your public." "But I really am very tired," said Amelia. "Celebrities are never tired." So Amelia was taken in an open carriage through streets lined with cheering people to a reception where 5 city councillors, 2 cabinet ministers, a professional footballer, and the chairman of the Association of the Promotion of Better Relations Between the Island and the Mainland all made speeches to her. She did not hear much of the speeches because she felt so cold and tired that she nearly fell asleep, only she was too hungry. But when they were finished, she was told that she must make a suitable and gracious reply. "But I can't speak," said Amelia. "On the island, girls are not allowed to make speeches." "Girls who are celebrities must always make speeches," they told her. "If you disappoint your public, you may undo the good work which you have already done in cementing the loyal friendship of our 2 nations. So Amelia got up and made a speech, but it was not a very good speech, and only the people just under the platform could hear her. And the rest said, "Well, we do think she might have spoken better. When one takes all this trouble over a celebrity, she ought to show a little more savoir-faire." "And now, please," said Amelia, "might I have just a cup of soup and go to bed?" But they told her that a very grand luncheon party had been organised in her honour at the mayor's house, and they set before her lobsters and caviar and tornadoes à la belle Amelia and ice pudding, which she could not eat very well because she still felt rather seasick. Then she was taken to open the new wing of a children's hospital and asked to say a few words about preventive medicine. "But I don't know anything about preventive medicine," said Amelia. "Of course you do," they replied. "All celebrities know something about everything." So Amelia said a few words and then was taken to a football match and asked to kick off for the opposing teams. "But where shall I kick?" asked Amelia. "How very foolish you are," they told her, beginning to lose patience. "You don't have to kick anyway, you just kick off. All celebrities kick off." So Amelia kicked off, and then she was taken to the broadcasting station and asked to broadcast for half an hour a bright informal talk on sea walking as a career for girls. "But I can't broadcast," said Amelia, "and I don't know anything about sea walking as a career for girls, except that to judge from my experience, it's pretty awful." "Oh, you can't possibly say anything like that," they told her. "Do you realise that 8 million people are hanging upon your every word, and that we have arranged for the United States to relay a coast-to-coast link-up, and that you cannot disappoint your public?" Amelia said that she would hate to disappoint anyone, but that really she would prefer to go to bed. However, when she saw that there was no help for it, she consented to broadcast. She didn't broadcast very well because she had nothing to say, and her throat had begun to be sore, and she stopped in the middle. And all the newspapers had large headings. "Amelia disappoints on wireless. Heroine of water waves fails on sound waves." She was very sorry to have been a disappointment, but she had little time to repine as she was taken to a beauty competition to judge the most perfect figure among mainland girls and to give a brief talk upon, is sea walking good for the complexion? She was hoarser than ever by this time, but she was only halfway through her talk when a man appeared saying that he must speak to her because his paper was very angry, as it had bought the exclusive rights to her publicity for £20,000 and her broadcast talk had contravened their contract. "But I don't understand anything about contracts," said Amelia. "In the island, young women are not allowed to learn anything about business." "Then you have no right to be a celebrity," said the man. "Celebrities always have to do a great deal of business, and we have lost £100,000 over this affair." "I'm terribly sorry," said Amelia. But then her throat, which had been growing sorer and sorer, gave out altogether, and she lost her voice and began to cry. All the newspapers in the world then rushed out articles saying that a girl's strength was not really equal to walking on water, and that the island had been quite wise to discourage athleticism among members of the weaker sex. The young water-walking champion stated in exclusive interviews that they had realised from the beginning that Amelia's exploit was doomed to failure, and that girls lacked the stamina necessary for great feats. The bishop wound up the syndicate symposium with an earnest and soul-searching article in which he said that water-walkers obviously could not make good mothers, since Amelia had displayed her lamentable ignorance of preventive medicine. And Amelia went home to her mother, and married the local secretary of the Athletic, Aquatic and Water Walking Association, and had 6 children, whom she did not even allow to paddle during the summer holidays. And, except for that privation, they all lived happily ever after.
The Celebrity Who Failed by Winifred Holtby was read by Alice Arnold and produced by Tessa Kendall.